Greetings, Earthlings, and welcome to Are UFO Real? My name's Tom, and with me as always is Grant.
Hey guys.
So, what we are going to be doing in this episode is exploring a book that was written by a gentleman named Tom DeLonge of Blink 182 fame. It is called Secret Machines, Book 1, Chasing Shadows. And Grant has done a bunch of research on this topic, particularly with this book, and he's going to kind of share his thoughts with us, and I'm going to react, see how I feel about what's in this book, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, and I'm definitely interested to get your take on this here. I want to start off, well, there's going to be a lot of spoilers here, so if you're planning on reading this, or it might be a movie someday, I think, so... Anyway, there's going to be a lot of spoilers because I'm going to go through the plot point by point pretty much. But I also wanted to say, and I know it's kind of dumb to dwell on this point, but I don't want to be self-obsessed or anything like that. But I want to give a disclaimer. I'm not a professional broadcaster, and I went ahead and wrote a script for this in the interest of making sure that I report all the important information without glossing over it or anything or getting sidetracked. And I might sound kind of robotic reading off of it. So anyway.
I forgive you, man.
Yeah, yeah. I hope the audience does too. But I'm also worried that I over-explain stuff. But well, anyway, that's how I roll. And so that being said, Secret Machines Book 1, Chasing Shadows, is the first book released by Tom DeLonge and company over at To the Stars Academy, I believe. I don't know. I didn't really check. But just for a quick background for the uninitiated, Tom DeLonge, he's the guitarist and singer for Blink 182, who was a huge band when I graduated high school back in 97, I think.
They were still huge when I graduated in 2000.
Okay. Yeah, I might be. Well, anyway, I'm not sure. I'm not a Blink 182 professor or anything. But basically he's come forward in the news recently. He's heading a company that's bringing together different people from the government and military to research UFO folklore and stuff. It's supposed to bring together science and entertainment and aliens, I guess. I don't know. The supernatural kind of.
Right.
It's all kind of vague, actually. Everyone seems to be scratching their heads about exactly what it is. But they're definitely making books and I think movies and TV shows and records. So that's one arm of it. And so
one thing in my understanding is that's to make it more palatable.
Yeah, yeah.
For everybody. I hope I didn't jump into what you were going to say there, but I think that's why he's doing this, is because he says that there, all the information that he has to be released is some pretty heavy duty stuff.
Right.
And it needs to be brought forth in a pleasing and entertaining way so that people will be able to handle it.
Right, right. And I actually will get into that here, but
gotcha.
Yeah, that's the idea, you know. And so they if you're interested in To the Stars, we're going to get into it more. Basically, that's what we're starting these episodes with, is we're going to kind of put the building blocks together so then we can look at the whole picture at the, you know, at the end of all these episodes and kind of see where we're at and how much stock we can put in Tom DeLonge and company and everything. But so if you're interested, I definitely recommend heading over to the To the Stars Academy website. It's it's an interesting story no matter how it turns out in the end, I think, you know. And I'll put the episode info in the link here. We'll put the link in the episode info.
The website info?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Anyway, like I said, not good at reading off a script here. So just for a little context on the book, when Tom DeLonge was interviewed on the Joe Rogan podcast, he said something like he was going to make a bunch of mind-blowing media that would slowly reveal real-life secrets with a K. I forgot to mention, it's Secret Machines with a K. So it's
like the band Korn?
Yeah, it's some serious stuff. So so he's going to reveal these secrets that he'd become aware of or maybe figured out himself, or I'm not really sure. Part of it was given to him and part of it was reviewed, or I don't know.
Part of the secrets were given to him.
Exactly. So I don't know. I mean, we'll get into that too, but it seems like he just seems like a conspiracy theorist really that went to the government, I guess, but you know what I mean?
Huh?
So anyway, still not too clear. Like where the information in here comes from, basically. But his idea is that it would make people comfortable with unfamiliar concepts in a fun and easy way, you know, telling stories like you said, like you just said. So, you know, kind of like analogy I like is the Matrix, you know, once someone sees the Matrix, it's really easy to talk about living in virtual reality. The first time I heard about like ancient aliens concept, you know, which is it for those that are unfamiliar. I'm sure everyone knows it's listening to this, but, you know, that humans are basically just cargo cults that worship these aliens flying by or whatever, you know, and alien artifacts, or were influenced directly by aliens. But I know Stargate was the first movie that like kind of introduced that concept to me, and it made a lot of sense, you know.
Dude,
so
I remember that. Stargate was awesome. I didn't watch the TV show or any of the follow-up stuff on that, but I remember.
No, I heard it was good though. But
that first Stargate movie was rad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while. I don't know how it would hold up.
Maybe we should take a dive into Stargate in a future episode.
Yeah. I think it's awesome. Yeah, awesome concept. I was thinking about trying to watch it with my wife, but I tried showing her The Matrix last night, and she was not happy. So she doesn't like sci-fi too much.
Good call on The Matrix, though. Yeah, that's a good analogy as well.
Yeah. I mean, I never really thought about virtual reality, and it really breaks it down in like two scenes, like how that would work, you know, and it seems feasible, you know. I was also
sorry to catch you up, but do you think that's where he's going with this? Tom DeLonge, do you think that's where he's like, he's trying to make like a Matrix or a Stargate type thing that will enter the public discourse?
I think that's what he said. He's like, these concepts, like
he wants to red pill everyone.
Basically, yeah. Like, okay. I mean, I think he wants people to understand how these ships work, and the best way to do that is through a fake story, through science fiction, and before it becomes fact. You know, that's my take on it anyway. But we'll get into the plot and see what you think here too.
So you said,
but go ahead.
You said plot as in it's a novel.
Oh yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. So it is a fictionalized novel. But let me get back to the script here. So I wanted to say because I think that idea is really good. Like I said, I'm intrigued by the concept of using entertainment to explain ideas. Right. I mean, I'm a film major, as I mentioned before, and people are giving him a lot of crap for it online, calling it a cash grab and all this stuff, which it could be, you know. But I'm interested in how people view the world through the lens of their personal mythology, and it seems obvious to me that most people, at least in our generation, form their mythologies based off of TV and film and the internet now, I guess. Also, I think there's a lot of great stories out there in the UFO zeitgeist that would make great movies if they were just dramatized, much like Fire in the Sky or anything, you know, I mean, and, I find a movie about, I remember the kind of the idea for doing this podcast at first was just reading about theories about the astronauts running into huge, like watching huge UFOs across a crater on the moon, and that just like scared the crap out of me basically. But I think it would be an awesome movie, you know. Maybe Transformers already did that or something. But let's see. So I was intrigued by the idea, but after reading some reviews online, I kind of decided to pass, you know. And again, I don't want to make this all about me, but yeah, the book's like 700 pages, 670, so it's not a thin book, you know.
Yeah.
And then let me show you the tone of this here. I'm going to read a little blurb off the back. For those who know that something is going on. There's a lot of dot, dot, dots in there. That's two sentences. And then the witnesses are legion, scattered across the world and dotted through history. People who looked up and saw something impossible lighting up the night sky. What those objects were, where they came from, and who or what might be inside them is the subject of fierce debate and equally fierce mockery, so that most who glimpsed them came to wish they hadn't. Most, but not everyone. So it's some serious stuff here. And let's see here. So the other thing is, well, I ended up reading it basically because I was hanging out with my friend. And I mentioned To the Stars and how crazy it was Tom DeLonge was involved because he was a Blink-182 fan. And he's like, oh, yeah, I went to a book signing. I have both his books signed. Did I never tell you that? You know, so then I came across a free copy and I grabbed it. The other one he has is Secret Machines, Gods, Volume 1, Gods, Man, and War. And So there's some pretty clunky titles there.
There's some grandiose topics.
Right? Like, it's so confusing. But I was really excited about the Gods book, actually, is the other one I have, because that's like a series. They're supposed to be more philosophical, that get into explaining the real meat and potato stuff in a direct way, you know? I don't know if that's a term or not.
Meat and taters? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I know it's a meal, but so they're both co-authored by Tom DeLonge with one other author. Chasing Shadows is co-authored by A.J. Hartley. I'm not familiar with him. Do you know him at all?
No clue.
No clue. And then Gods is co-authored by Peter Lavenda, who I'm also unfamiliar with.
Never heard of him.
Okay. That makes both of us. And then at first I was more excited about the Gods book, but figured I would start with Chasing Shadows so I could kind of get an insight into what's really going on, quotation marks. And plus I wanted to see if it was any good. I hadn't read anything for fun in a while, and I just didn't have any time with all the staring at the phone and everything. So after reading Chasing Shadows, I don't know if I'll actually read Gods. They're both really thick books, and they're easy to read, or Chasing Shadows is a pretty quick read. But if it's for the podcast, who knows? Maybe I'll check it out.
Yeah.
From what I understand, reading different reviews, it's a poorly edited and kind of just hypothesizes about ancient aliens, or basically that aliens have been visiting mankind, influencing different cultures through human history. From what I understand from the reviews that I read, that they think that most religions are really just different versions of the cargo cult, as I just explained.
Could you go into the cargo cult just a little bit more?
Yeah, it's kind of, are you familiar with it? I mean,
not the term. I think I know what you're getting at, but just explain what you mean by cargo cult.
Yeah, it's basically, so when tribal societies, they kind of form religions around the artifacts of the modern world when they come across them. So like in World War II, I think where it really comes from is like cargo falling out.
Right.
Again, a movie introducing the concept would be The Gods Must Be Crazy.
Right, the Coke can. yeah, the Coke bottle.
I just thought of that, but yeah, that's a cargo cult. I mean, I don't know if anyone listening knows what that movie is or anything,
Well, I remember watching it as a wee lad. Yeah. It was awesome.
But it was an interesting concept too, thinking about how different people view the world, you know. That was kind of a new concept to me at the time, you know. I took Coke bottles for granted.
Yeah. So a cargo cult would essentially be a civilization piggybacking
No, it's like worshiping a plane as a god, that's all they see. They don't know there's people in them, or they don't know anything about them except for what they make up, I guess, you know. Now, one of these reviews made a pretty good point that it's like, I mean, it seems like a very atheist view, you know, like it kind of disparaging religion there, like saying that all religions are just stories made by seeing UFOs, you know what I mean? And a lot of people are religious today and get a lot of out of it. So I don't know if that's I don't know, you know, I don't know. It just seems kind of very disregarding of religion, you know?
The cargo cult theory, you mean?
The theory that Christianity and Islam and everything is based on aliens coming down and manipulating humans, you know? But I guess, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not even sure how to respond to that.
That's really vague. I haven't read the book or anything, but I think some of the suppositions they make is just kind of like dismissive of I don't know. Belief systems and stuff, you know. I don't know. I guess I just thought that was an interesting thing, because not being too religious myself, I think you know, it's easy for me to consider that as like, oh yeah, they're probably just making stuff up based on this, you know. But I could see how some people might have problems with that theory, you know.
Yeah, well, people are very protective of their
mythologies and beliefs.
They're deeply held beliefs.
Worldviews.
I think that's a better way to put it. I think they're super protective of that, myself included. I mean, I have very firm beliefs about certain things, and, you know, I like to think that I'm open-minded, but, you know, and I like to think that I would be open to having my mind changed about things. I am open to having my mind changed about the whole UFO phenomenon. But
absolutely, yeah. I mean, I guess I'm not sure what my point was. I just thought it was kind of an interesting observation, you know. So, basically, that's just the impression I got from the internet. I haven't read the other book, but maybe we'll get into it. I don't know. Let us know if you want me to read it. But so let's get into the basic plot of Chasing Shadows, then I'll get into the different conspiracy theories that it hints at being real. It's unclear how many of these ideas simply come from Tom DeLonge's imagination and how many, if any, have been confirmed, quote-unquote, by people, quote-unquote, in the know. I also wanted to add that there's a Chasing Shadows album that he put out too. I think as Angels and Airwaves. I'm not sure if it's meant as a soundtrack for the book or what exactly the idea is, but I think it's like based on characters and stuff like that. I just thought the concept of a soundtrack for a book is cool. It's not something I'd ever heard about before.
Yeah, I don't really listen to music when I read or anything like that. I don't know if I would find that distracting, but I think that is kind of a cool idea.
I was thinking it might be like kind of like the Nine Inch Nails soundtrack for the original Quake, you know, where it's just kind of ambient.
Okay.
But then I turned on it and it was like a U2 ripoff, you know, so.
Oh, are there?
Sorry to the Tom DeLonge fans, but that's what I view Angels and Airwaves as. And that one specifically sounded like a specific U2 song to me, the one that I listened to. So.
Are there lyrics? Like, does he sing?
Yeah, that's the thing.
He sings on it?
Yeah, so I don't think he had the same idea.
Okay.
So I thought it was going to be like a cool instrumental thing that set the mood or something like that, you know,
which
I think is a cool idea. Like, you go back to any classic book and, you know, write a soundtrack for Frankenstein or something. It'd be cool, you know.
I thought you meant at first the way it sounded was he was doing kind of like a Brian Eno thing where it would just be ambient music that he composed specifically for the background. Well, like to like...
Yeah, that's what I imagine like, when I heard
it. While you're reading
too,
chapter
yeah.
one, I would recommend listening to this, or this I wrote in anticipation of you reading this part in chapter two. But if he's sitting there crooning the whole time, like, no, man, I don't know. Maybe that wasn't his intention to begin with.
Yeah,
maybe,
I don't think it was. I think it was more just, I don't know what his intention was, you know, but...
Cash grab.
Yeah, I'm putting all this information. I don't mean to like delve too much into it, but you know, it's important to take a step back, look at the context of where this information that we're going to analyze comes from, because you know, I mean,
yeah,
it's some crazy claims. So the other thing I want to say, I'm not used to being a public figure, not that I'm going to be out there, you know, and everyone's going to know who I am or anything, but I am being critical of Tom DeLonge here on a public forum, which, you know, I understand that, you know, it's easy to criticize something with your friends, but this is going to go out and, you know, I think it's a really good idea. I'm no means a professional writer and I hate to disparage anybody else's work. I don't know what kind of restraints or pressures or whatever else that they were on in publishing it. So anyway, just take the criticisms with a grain of salt, you know?
Well, you know what? I think that's pretty noble of you to say. I think most people wouldn't even do that.
Yeah.
I think most people would just throw it out there and say, you know what? Fuck Tom DeLonge.
Well, he's done a lot more than I have, you know, so, you know, more power to him. He can do whatever he wants, but I can have my opinions about it too. So
damn right.
And honestly, he seems like a cool guy and I appreciate what he's doing, you know, unless he's just trying to lie to everybody to get money, but I don't think he is.
Well, we'll get to the bottom of that.
Yeah. So now we're going to get into some real spoilers because I'm just going to go through the book here. So the style of the book, it's kind of like a simplified Game of Thrones with first-person narration that switches between characters from chapter to chapter. It jumps around in time between chapters quite a bit, but most of the main story is present day. The story is mostly told through the eyes of the three main protagonists, sometimes from some aliens' points of views. Actually, there's four main protagonists. And then there's also little random chapters of people observing UFOs and historical UFO incidents, including Barney and Betty Hill and stuff like that. It kind of... For some reason, I kept being reminded of Train Spotting with these little interstitials just because they're like so removed from the story, but kind of set in the mood, you know, or the tone. And then, so the tone of the book is kind of, it's like a thriller and it reminds me of like a thriller you'd like get in an airport or something like that. Like an airport book is how I thought of it. or maybe like a young adult novel. I think it might be targeted more towards younger adults, you know?
Okay.
Well, yeah. Recently on a road trip with my dad, we were listening to this book on CD about an FBI agent, and the style really reminded me of that. Like, I honestly thought it was the same author, but I researched and it wasn't. But,
oh my God, I just thought of something brilliant. Uh-huh. Is there an audiobook for this?
Oh, there's got to be. Yeah.
Does he read it?
I don't know. I doubt it. I doubt it. Yeah, I highly doubt it if that's the case.
Heavy breathing.
Well, hopefully I'm not heavy breathing into this here. Let's see. So basically these characters, they're always like making up nicknames for people in their heads and stuff. They're all like kind of smart assy to me, it seems like, but maybe they're just supposed to be like tough, you know, or I don't know. It's like the typical badass Han Solo types, you know? And, I'm sorry here. I feel like I'm totally getting into this too much. You're making myself a part of the story. We just watched the Bob Lazar documentary, and I don't want to be that beardy guy there. But anyway, obviously the reason for reading the book for me was that I wanted to get the UFO info. So I wasn't really involved in the narrative too much. It was kind of just like filler that I wanted to get through. I actually think I'm going to spend way too much time on the narrative here, but it's so convoluted and I just want to get your take on everything. And I think it's important when deciding how seriously to take the claims of the authors in the books, like I said. So essentially it has four main protagonists that start in very different places and they all end up together in the airfield in Area 51 by the end of a very convoluted story. I could picture it as a pretty watchable movie, but I find the action scenes kind of boring to read, and there's a lot of them, and I kind of find them boring to watch too, but again, that's just my opinion. Let me see. So the first character is Major Alan Young, a Harrier pilot in Afghanistan in 2014. He's providing air support for the ground team on a hostage rescue mission when a strange UFO appears and disables his weapon systems right when he needs them in order to stop some choppers from killing some of the troops on the ground. The commander of the ground team happens to be his old football buddy from college, so they're very close. Anyway, he's the only one who sees the UFO, and he's reluctant to report it. If I'm remembering this correctly, like it's kind of blurred here. I read it like a month ago. But then he gets recruited by the FBI, and he has to resign from the Air Force. So he meets his new FBI boss. And then he meets the hostage, as I guess the mission was still successful, even though it got bombed and people died and stuff. But his name is Morat, the hostage, and he's a scientist and also a pilot. And so they fly over to Area 51. He gives up his wings, and now he's an FBI guy. And so there he's shown a top secret craft, which is basically a man-made UFO, and he's now the test pilot for it. And some of it is pretty weird. It's like they go into like speakers playing static in the hallway for top secret discussions, and lots of attention to people asking him to turn his head while they open doors and stuff. Also, when he first arrives at Area 51, there's an alarm and all the guards lay down on the ground and cover their heads so that they won't see anything. I have to imagine some of it had to be inspired by Tom DeLonge's dealings with government agents and skunkworks operatives and stuff, and I think it made a big impression on him, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So, I mean, he talks about that in the interview too, obviously, a lot. And so we find out that the Russians, or maybe they were Nazis, I think. I might be conflating them, but they have this type of technology as well, and there's a secret war going on unknown to the rest of the world. And they go into a lot of detail about the man-made UFO, which is a black saucer. They also have an advanced model, which is a silver one. And most of his narrative until the end is just him on the base being trained to fly the saucer by the two guys he met in Afghanistan. And there's also a scientist that he calls Beaker in his head. His football buddy, comes to the base, and they go to the little alien a few times, which is the famous Roswell site.
I think that's in Rachel, Nevada.
Yeah. It's a hot spot for right. UFO documentaries and stories, apparently, too, and aficionados. But I think there's also a lot of time devoted to him just emotionally dealing with all this information. It's funny because he's supposed to be this highly trained military guy, but he seems so childish and rebellious all the time. Like, they go on, like, test flights in it. And basically, I mean, it's just like a regular pilot seat. It's just, I don't know, it's kind of silly, but... Like he goes in the simulation. He's like, "Oh, I'm excited to try this new technology. The simulation is supposed to be the top of the line." And he's like, "This is impossible. There's no way a real thing could go this fast." And they're like, "No, man, it's real." And he just doesn't believe it. And I mean, I get it, but as a viewer, you're like, "Yeah, it's real. All right, let's go." Like, anyway, but I don't know. Anyway, the second protagonist is Jennifer Quinn, a daughter of a recently deceased 1%er Koch brother type English businessman.
Huh.
We know now this is where, let me know if the narrative gets confusing. I think it's pretty clear up to here, but I'm going to move fast here. So we know that he was murdered and her dad was murdered, and it was made to look like a suicide as we see it through his eyes in the beginning of the story. But of course there's no way to identify who the killer was. He just says you. And then she's like liberally minded and resentful of how her father makes his money. So they were estranged before he died. But then he left a clue for her on the desk, and she recognizes and begins to suspect foul play. And then she's able to find a secret file that shows that large amounts of money were being funneled into a mysterious company in secret. Oh, yeah. And right before he died, her father had willed everything to her. So she finds an ambiguous note from her father in the data card that just says, "Trust Latrange," the youngest of the board members on her father's company. So
that's funny. I found a note the other day on my desk that said, "Trust DeLong."
Yeah. Wow. I you know, I was looking at Latrange because I don't know how to pronounce it, but I never put that together, how close it was to DeLong. But so she reaches out to Latrange, and he tries to kill her, but she narrowly gets away and heads out to Nevada to search for a piece of land having to do with the clues that she found. To make a long story short, luckily he tries to kill her near Heathrow, which makes sense because it would be so loud no one would hear. But then it's pretty convenient because then she could just run to the airport and stuff. On the way, she meets up with Alan Young at the Little Alien Bar. That's our first protagonist. They get into an argument and stuff, but that's not really important. And then she goes to the property, which is this part was really weird, I thought, but, so it's a big empty piece of land, and she meets this weird couple who live on the property who they're just like sitting on the porch, and then they call some men in black to take her and just drive her around, and they just ask her weird questions and warn her to stay away and then drop her off.
Who called the men in black?
The weird old people that live on the property. Porch people. Yeah, they're like, "Oh, let me..." You know, it didn't make a lot of sense. Like I said, it was kind of confusing. I think that was kind of... You know, it's like those movies where you meet the friendly, old, creepy people or whatever, and then it turns out that they're really evil, but they're smiling the whole time or whatever. You know what I mean? Like the polite psychopaths or whatever.
Right, right.
That's what it reminded me of, though. But I guess it captures... That's what you keep hearing about Men in Black, is it was just like really weird, you know? But I don't know. I didn't really get that part, honestly. But basically, they make her some lemonade and stuff, and then like kind of keep her there, and then... And like, "Oh, they're going to come pick you up. And they're usually not as nice as we are," while they're smiling at her and stuff. So it's like, all right, cool. You know?
Weird.
Yeah, yeah. So then of course, she goes back to explore at night. She goes back there. And then she runs into the third protagonist, coincidentally. And the third protagonist is Tamika Mars in New York. And she's a paranormal investigator and operator of a skeptical conspiracy website called Debunction, with a K. Well, I guess
Debunk-tion.
Yeah, yeah. I guess debunk is with a K. So, her story starts when some goons acting as police officers approach her and search her office after she receives a mysterious old diary, which she later also finds a key inside of. She's a smart cookie, so she's able to sniff out the ruse of the thugs. And by following names in her diary, she goes on some adventures, breaking into old folks' homes under high security, which basically turns out to be holding facilities for people involved in Project Paperclip. If you're not familiar with Project Paperclip, that's where Nazi scientists came to work on rockets and stuff for the U.S. government after World War II.
Yeah, yeah, they defected over here, right?
Yeah. Do you know, with doing all this stuff with Bob Lazar, like, I guess Project Paperclip was kind of recently it was uncovered that actually happened, or is that true? I mean, we always knew that one guy was in charge of the A-bomb or whatever, right? But I don't even know if he was a Nazi, really. Oppenheimer?
Yeah,
I think yeah, he was part of Project Paperclip too, but I don't know. I didn't actually look into that too much.
I'm not sure on that, man.
Okay, so basically, yeah, she finds this diary. Did that all make sense? I don't know.
Yeah,
so basically,
yeah,
she's going trying to find this list of names, right? And she finds them at this building and sneaks in there. So she talks to an old lady whose father was a German scientist who took her with him one night when he was rushed to Area 51. And we experienced this from her point of view earlier in the story as well. And he also smuggles out a metallic material and gives it to her because he knows that she will love it, which seems funny to me. It's a metallic material that crumples like tinfoil, but then reverts back to its original shape. After Tamika learns this, she's driving alone through the woods and her car stops running and she gets picked up by a UFO. When she comes to, she's in a typical UFO abduction situation where she's in a strange lab with gray type aliens around her and a voice in her head. But then I forget exactly how, but she realizes that she's just been drugged and they have like an earbud in her. So it's kind of like Back to the Future, you know? Well, that's what it reminded me of, like when Darth Vader shows up in Back to the Future. You remember that?
I do.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
So she realizes that she's just been drugged, and then she fights her way out, and she finds out that they're just Russians in suits. And then she gets out of the lab and she steps out into Siberia. And then she's caught and drugged and dropped off in the Nevada desert where Jennifer Quinn happens to be.
So. This poor lady is just captured and drugged repeatedly.
Yeah. Well, that's like, that's her story, is running around, like trying to hide from people and then always getting caught, basically. Cause that she goes to two different old folks' home and is like running around and jumping fences and stuff. It's, I mean, a lot of spy stuff in there, you know, which was, which I just wanted to get through basically. But, so the last protagonist is Jersey. I'm not sure of his last name, but he's a Polish Jew in a Nazi concentration camp in Poland during World War II. And he's the author of the diary that was given to Tamika. His story is pretty convoluted too, but basically he's recruited to work by the Nazis on a Stonehenge-like structure. And he also sees a Liberty Bell type device. Are you familiar with that? I guess it's like
a Liberty Bell device.
Yeah. I'm not too familiar with that either, but I think it's like, basically, it was this bell-shaped device that the Nazis were purported to be working on or had found that generated zero-point energy or something like that, and also emitted radiation. I did a little bit of reading on it. I mean, maybe we'll get into it later, but that's, you know, it. I guess it's part of UFO folklore and Nazis. Have you ever heard of the theories of Nazis?
I knew
researching UFOs and stuff.
Yeah. I have heard about that kind of stuff. I heard Hitler was into all sorts of weird occult stuff. And, UFO research, that kind of thing.
I always thought it sounded kind of silly, like not, you know, Nazis are good, bad guys, you know, but, I don't know, whatever, maybe it's true, but.
Well, I mean, if there was all this flying saucer phenomena going on around at the time, it would make sense for.
That's very true.
Anyone in power to take it seriously if,
that is true.
Just to find out who it is, if it's. Because if you're Hitler and the thing flying around is not German, whose is it? And
right. I mean, that's the main thing going on, I think, in UFO land these days, is like it's all about the zero point energy and it's a secret because once you have that, you're unstoppable, basically. But
and is zero, I assume what you mean by zero point energy is energy production where there's no heat loss, where there's no loss. No loss.
I don't even know what I mean, but okay. I think it's like perpetual energy, you know?
Okay. Okay. Got it.
And unlimited.
Got
unlimited
it.
Perpetual energy. Or,
okay.
I don't even, you know.
There's no efficiency loss.
Something I read somewhere, yeah. Basically. But
there's no efficiency loss due to heat emanating from the energy production.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And anyway. You know, like nuclear energy makes nuclear waste, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't remember all the details clearly, as his story, believe it or not, is pretty convoluted too, but basically he ends up escaping. So yeah, you know, he gets recruited, him and his brother volunteer to go work on this Stonehenge thing, and they hook up these cables and then they all start getting gunned down, but Jersey sees it and he runs away and gets away, but his brother gets gunned down. And, so then he joins the resistance, goes back in an attack on the base, since he has intel on it, and he also wants revenge on the ruthless commander there that commanded his brother to be killed ruthless. And then I believe the Nazis are loading equipment up and manage to get everything evacuated before the U.S. Army comes and destroys the base. But then Jersey befriends one of the top brass, who is Captain Jennings, and he takes an interest in him, Captain Jennings does, and you know, he's kind of asking him what he saw and stuff. And then, so I'm going to kind of jump to the end of his story, but he ends up going on a secret mission to Argentina and then Antarctica, and they're trying to track down the Nazis who escaped to Argentina, and they're...
Jersey's trying to track, or Jennings?
Yeah. Well, he ends up being recruited and he serves on Jennings' ship, and Jennings like uses him as a secret agent kind of, and then he goes on this trip through through Argentina, and they find... Yeah, it's kind of blurring there because, like, you know, this is like three quarters into the book where I'm just like trying to get through it, basically. But they're loading. Let's see. So they find a secret base in Antarctica where the Nazis have a flying saucer, but when they're attacking it, the saucer gets away, and that's kind of the end of his story. So all these things come together because obviously they got the journal, and then we got the two ladies in the desert in Area 51 where, so meanwhile, Alan Young is going through some adventures as well.
That's the first guy?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. He's the pilot.
Yeah.
And so it turns out there's a double agent in Area 51. And then this is a huge spoiler, but basically Morat, the hostage scientist pilot, and Latrange turn out to be the same guy. So,
what?
Yeah. So it's pretty crazy. So he's also a board member in this English company. And so we learn that Morat killed the hostage and pretended to be him during the original rescue mission in the beginning. And so now the Russians, or maybe it's the Nazis, that I don't know, are attacking Area 51 and taking out all the U.S. flying saucers. You gotta understand, like, it's all vague, kind of like hinting at all these secrets that you're eventually going to understand.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So luckily, basically, so that, you know, they plan this excellent attack, and it turns out like what they're really after is the base where they made it look like they were taking out these nuclear bases and all this stuff. It's kind of, you know, tying together all these UFO sightings at nuclear bases and all this good stuff. And so they've destroyed most of the craft, but luckily Alan Young, he jumps in the advanced craft that they have there, the silver one that, you know, they say is still kind of new and everything. And he saves the day. The same craft that he originally saw shows up, and I'm sorry because I was having trouble following the action at this point, but so that craft shows up, and I wasn't sure if that was, you know, supposed to be part of the Russians or the Nazis or whoever the bad guys were, but you know, I guess you can guess who they are. But the same craft that he originally saw shows up, and Alan does a kamikaze attack on it and takes it down. Meanwhile, his football buddy is met up with the ladies out in the desert, and they're racing baddies, basically all the bad guys in the book. And the police thugs are there, and then the evil old guy from the company and everything is there. I think Morat's flying around. Morat Latrange. And so they're trying to get to this bunker that has a key. You know, they have the key to the bunker from the diary. So
is it a skeleton key? Or not a skeleton? Is it like one of those old school?
I would have to imagine it. No, it's like a modern...
like a swipey?
I mean, when they open it, they pull it out like one of body things. So it's like, you know, I think it's a normal military key from the 50s or 60s or something like that, you know. But I don't think they get into the key too much. But, I mean, what the structure of the key is, at least.
Yeah.
But
drat.
If they did, I wasn't paying that much attention.
Drat.
But I'd say it's a skeleton key. So I'm having trouble remember what happens as it gets kind of mind numbing here, and then it's like starts bouncing from between character to narrator, you know. And
it sounds like it bounces from era to era.
Yeah, it bounces all over the place.
Chronologically, it's.
Yeah, I mean, it's trying to tell a big conspiracy story, obviously. So, yeah.
Now, in the novel, it doesn't go in chronological order. It sounds like it bounces all over the place, right?
Right. I mean, then, you know, it goes chronologically for each character, but yeah, it's skipping through each story.
Okay.
I almost wish, let me read you the last page just so you can.
Sure.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Because I didn't really even understand the ending. I don't know, but I just want to give you the tone of how they keep hinting at stuff without, you know, like eventually it's going to be awesome, but you're going to have to buy the next book. Read the next book to find out. Let's see. Should have had this marked here. Sorry. You want to go ahead and read it?
Sure.
I would start with "Tell me, Major," right there.
"Tell me, Major," he said absently. "Are you religious?" Alan blinked and tried to focus. Maybe he was already dreaming. "Not really," he said at last. "Why? What does any of that have to do with religion?"
Whoa, your Alan Major is way different than Major Young, I should say. Sorry, go ahead.
"Oh," said the bald man, looking up and smiling, a cat-like grin that did not reach his eyes. He pushed the book across the table to where Alan could read the two words on its spine. "Oh, absolutely everything," said the man, tapping the book with his index finger. The lettering on its spine said, "The Odyssey by Homer." Though perhaps myth is a better term than religion, less loaded. "Major Young, did you ever wonder how the Apollo space program got its name?" Alan blinked. "Apollo was the god of the sun, right?" he said. "And crossed the sky daily in a glittering chariot," Kenyon agreed. "So?" "So let's consider the possibility that chariot was more than metaphorical." "Let me get this straight," said Alan. "You're saying that the craft we're flying were brought here by aliens, which humans took to be the gods of ancient Greece, but they left and now we have their stuff?" In response to Alan's contemptuous tone, Kenyon smiled, but for a moment so long it became uncomfortable that he said nothing, just staring unblinkingly at Alan. That odd, knowing smile fixed on his nondescript face. At last he opened his mouth, but the next eight words came out so low that Alan had to strain to hear them. "What makes you think they ever left?"
So, yeah.
Sorry. "What makes you think that they ever left?" That's eight words right there. And then it ends with, "to be continued."
Yeah. So, some ominous stuff. I see, he's so contemptuous of everything, even though he just admitted in the page before that he saw inside the craft full of aliens. So, I don't know why he's having. He doesn't believe anything, basically.
He does seem Dana Scully ish.
Let's see. So it's a pretty convoluted story, if you could follow all that.
Yeah.
Now I don't think they ever, so they got a case. I kind of glossed over that, but they got a case out of that bunker and then the bad guys ended up escaping with it. But, I don't think they ever said what was really in the case or anything. So we'll find out sometime. Either that or it was a big piece of that material maybe, but, I don't remember. So
the crumple up material.
Yeah. Yeah.
That returns to its original form.
Right. Whatever okay. It was probably mysterious and just led to more questions, you know?
Right.
And then, so basically it's a very convoluted story. Everybody ends up in the exact same spot at the exact same time, really started straining my suspense of disbelief. And by the end, I felt like I had been led by the nose and promised all would be revealed in time. For so long, I just wanted to get it over with. The main characters were all shocked by the aliens, but as a reader, I was kind of expecting it the whole time, so it wasn't really mind-blowing to me. And basically, at the end, all you get is you'll understand at the end, which seems kind of BS-y, much like Tom DeLonge's interview, you know? Like,
yeah.
Well, I can't really talk about anything, but I'm telling you, it's crazy, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, come back when you can tell us. But I don't know. I mean, how would you handle a situation like that? I don't know.
Well, I think he's putting the cart before the horse.
Right.
To be honest. If you're going to say something like this, if you're going to claim that this novel is based, I'm going to read it verbatim right here. It says it's a novel based on actual events. If you're going to do that, you got to have the actual events laid out before the novel. Otherwise, there's no reason for me to treat this as anything other than a novel.
Right. I mean, it's such a far-fetched narrative that, like,
it seems like a clever kind of a marketing ploy. You know, it's really funny. You know that movie Fargo that the Coen brothers did?
Mm-hmm.
They said there was the thing before Fargo that said the following is based on actual events or something, and none of it was.
Right.
You know? I mean, it makes it more compelling. It makes the story more compelling if you base it on actual events. And if the actual events that he's claiming are actual involve alien phenomena, UFO technology, alien influence on humanity, then hell yeah, man. Like, that's pretty cool. That's pretty interesting.
Right.
But if you're going to make something, if you're going to try and make something palatable to people, if you're going to make a kiddie version, so to speak, you got to put out the real version before you put out the kiddie version. That's just how it is, you know?
Yeah.
In my opinion. The Bob Lazar interview that I was listening to on Rogan, I think you listened to it too. Mm-hmm. Lazar kept saying it's a crime to keep the information from humans, to keep the information, to keep the knowledge of alien civilizations from human beings. It's not a crime, it's not criminal to keep the technology a secret so much, but you gotta just, these secret machines, man, like the secrecy is killing me. it's killing me.
Well, yeah, I also, like, I think if you're gonna, obviously he wants to make a movie, like a trilogy out of it, I think, you know, so it's kind of geared towards that, I believe. I wish if it was like Game of Thrones. I mean, what's epic about Game of Thrones is there's so many characters involved. Like, he could have just gone through time having different random interesting characters, you know? I mean, that would have been much more entertaining to me, and just kept it, you know, and then put all the details he wants in there, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, for me, reading some of the interstitials were more interesting than the, you know, following this lady sneaking around a garden in an old imaginary old folks home, you know? Well, let's, the other thing I wanted to say is it does feel a lot like, I know I had a lot of faith. I've already watched Lost and been disappointed by the ending of it with a lot of expectations. And the same happened with Game of Thrones recently. So that's just my personal takes, but,
I can back you up on the Lost thing, man. I remember when you were watching it in real time and I finally got caught up with you.
Yeah.
I remember you were just like deflated, dude. Like, you were like, I remember you were like, God, I kind of just want this to be over with.
Yeah. I wish it had ended, a season earlier, basically. I could have done without the last season. They could have just ended it with the guys on the beach and my mind would have been blown. And that would have been fine. But, anyway, that's my take. Let's take a little break here. We've been recording for a while and then we'll come back and I'll just kind of run through, you know, we'll run through what he's really like claiming is true, I guess.
Sounds great.
And kind of analyze it.
Big time.
Awesome. How's it going, guys? This is Grant from the podcast, and I just want to take a minute to tell you about our sponsor, CBGW Guitars. You can order these on Etsy, and as you hear in the background here, they're three-string slide guitars. They're great for rock, blues, folk music, pretty much anything you want to play. And they're a lot of fun. They're pretty addictive. They're really easy to learn. They make great gifts. They're beautiful, just hanging on the wall. They're made from actual cigar boxes, not guitars. But, you know, full disclosure, I make them myself by hand, and I run CBG Dub, so if you just wanted to donate to the podcast or throw some cash my way, you know, I would appreciate it. But yeah, as you can hear, they're great instruments. You can find them on Etsy, and I'll put the link in the notes here, but just search CBG Dub on Etsy and you'll find the shop. Thanks for listening, and I'll let myself take you out with this soft ballad.
So that sounds really tricky, really convoluted, really head spinny, I think is the word that comes to mind.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in. And then, I mean, you're looking there for clues supposedly about this secret conspiracy, but I mean, you have to suspend your disbelief so much on just the story aspects of it, like the normal stuff, you know?
Yeah, I think sadly there's no room for nuance. These days, there's no room for subtlety. And when you're dealing with UFO phenomena, there's so much. Yeah, well, what if this? Yeah, well, what if that? Yeah, well, maybe this could happen. Maybe this could. If you're going to come to the table with some grandiose claims, you got to have some serious evidence to do it, man.
And, well, it says on the front, it's all based on a true story. So I think we're just Well, let's get into what they do seem to be claiming here.
Yeah.
I went through that pretty quickly there. I got to say, too, we were talking during the break, and right after Tom, you mentioned that meme. What was it?
The heavy breathing meme.
Yeah.
The meme with the big chubby cat in the parentheses that says heavy breathing.
Which I'm not familiar with, but the whole time after you said that, I just worried about my breathing into the mic while I was talking. I thought you were talking about Tom DeLonge breathing into the mic.
No. Implication was I was heavy breathing because the idea of Tom DeLonge doing an audiobook or like a book on tape is hilarious to me.
I would love to hear
so
that,
I was heavy breathing of the thought of Tom DeLonge reading this book out loud. Anyway.
You also got the opportunity. I showed you the beginning of Secret Machines, the song. And
yeah.
Lots of fans out there, but I thought it was,
let me put it this way.
Not for me.
Let me put it this way. It wasn't for me, and I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
You know? Yeah. So. I keep looking at Tom DeLonge, and he's not giving me what I'm looking for either. So anyway, I think I wasn't the target audience for this stuff, you know, since I've been doing so much reading on the subject, and I was familiar with all the stuff they're hinting at, like it's crazy.
That's interesting. You mentioned target audience. What is their target audience? Has DeLonge said anything about that?
Well, the public, quotes, you know, I guess. I hope it's not cynics or skeptics. You know?
Okay, so he's talking about like...
I think he's talking about young people, honest. I mean, after reading the material and his claims, it seems like he's just trying... Which is a theory that's been out there, is that he's just trying to build a franchise or something. And like you said, it's a good selling point. I think that's really interesting, you know. And I brought that up with the politicians and it coming out in the government. It's like, maybe there's some voters that like that stuff. It's kind of like, not to get into politics, but like building a wall or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yes, finally people are talking about this, you know?
Yeah.
Meaning aliens, of course.
Yeah.
And so what it seems to be claiming as far as the UFO conspiracy that I can remember and is the popular theory about Nazis having alien tech that they were trying to back engineer and some Nazis being recruited to work on U.S. back engineering projects through... Project Paperclip, including the famous Roswell crash or similar, you know, situations very similar to it of crafts being rushed late at night and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This also involves powerful international economic forces and private companies and secret funds and all that stuff. There's also an old German guy that was on the board of Jennifer Quinn's company. So there's some more Nazi ties in there and all that good stuff. And the main villain obviously is the guy that escaped with the case. I think some old guy that has creeped her out and looks like Skeletor or Skeleton or something. Yeah. I mean, it reads like a, honestly, I don't know. It's, yeah.
two thumbs down, one thumb down.
I mean, I wrote some short stories, and it's like, I'm sure if I went back and read them, I'd be like, oh, these are a little like obvious here. You know what I mean? A little cliched and a little heavy-handed, like, you know, heavy-handed, but not with the information, you know, just with the cliches and stuff. But so it also hints at secret Nazi bases in Antarctica. Let me try that again. Antarctica. as well as the Liberty Bell. Excuse me, hitting the mic stand there. And then it also seems to hint that a lot of the abduction scenarios and UFOs were really done by humans with advanced technology, with that strange Tamika abduction scene. But again, nothing's really explained so far, at least, except for the Apollo space program and where the name came from. You know, that's about as clear as they get as far as answers. But then it also states that aliens are here. So I'm wondering if they're going to get into some of the theories I've seen where the aliens are colluding and negotiating with world governments and stuff like that. You know, I think, I don't know if you've heard about that, where I think it was Roosevelt met with them or whatever.
Yes.
Or Eisenhower, yep. I believe. And that's why the Air Force was created and all this stuff.
God, what was the name of that guy? Dashing Dan
or Truman? Truman, right? Or what? Oh, yeah. Jeez,
Valiant Thor.
Yes,
Dashing Dan.
Dashing Dan. He's a very dashing guy, but yeah, for an alien. But yeah. If you're not familiar with that, it's a pretty interesting story. We'll probably get into that at some point. But so anyway, there. So. I kind of just made a list here, and this is about the end here, and we can kind of talk about each of these. But
sure.
So basically they're hinting at Nazi involvement with flying saucer technology, you know, which is, like I said, my take on that, I haven't looked at it too seriously because it's like once people start talking about Nazis, it's easy to dismiss them as kooks, conspiracy theorists, you know. But I don't know. I mean, it is weird that the Project Paperclip and all that stuff. But it makes more sense that they would be trying to develop rockets to me, I would say. Rockets are very important to our modern world, so.
Yeah, and if they're, so what would the question be, actually?
Well.
Exactly.
Well, like if they had if they're working on flying saucers that they back engineered from aliens, kind of the Bob Lazar thing.
You know? Okay.
Yeah, which is going to be, we're going to tackle that soon, or maybe we'll even release it before this one, you know?
Yeah. Let me put it this way. If there was a bunch, if there was flying saucer Fuhrer, F-U-R-O-R, not F-U-H.
Right.
Fuhrer, not Nazi Fuhrer. If there was a whole bunch of, you know, flying saucer stuff going on.
Oh, I was thinking of a different Fuhrer, mine Fuhrer, but yeah.
Yeah.
You mean like
F-U-R-O-R.
No, F-U,
like,
buddy.
Like, yeah.
F-U-R-O. Yeah, I get you.
Of course, it would make sense for any world government to investigate those claims, and it wouldn't surprise me if the Nazis investigated those. Now, as far as actually retrieving a craft and back engineering it and everything like that, if they got one, they didn't back engineer it very well because they lost the war, and or they were unsuccessful in back engineering it.
Right.
And I personally haven't seen any evidence of Nazis in Germany retrieving UFOs or anything.
You haven't personally seen any of it?
Nope. 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 Nope.
Okay.
And
I'm gonna keep my lips sealed on that one. I might have seen a few things. No. Yeah.
It
seems far fetched to say the least, right?
Yes.
I mean, yes. And then would they have not pulled it out at the end or in some way? Or I mean.
You know what?
Who's to say? I mean, that's all speculation, I guess.
But. You know what? That would have been interesting if during the war, if that had happened, the Nazis had retrieved UFO technology. They could have essentially said, like, hey, look at this weird thing we've got. You really want to mess with us right now?
Right, right. Kind of like that what we do with the nukes, right?
Yeah, but, exactly.
I think that is interesting theory just because, you know, it coincides with the time when we dropped a nuclear bomb on this planet, you know, and if there's visitors, that's gonna probably get their attention a little bit. At least it's an interesting development, you know.
Yeah, but as far as the Nazi connection, I don't see it, man.
What about aliens coming and having meetings with the president and negotiating with him and making secret bases and contracts and stuff without knowing any of the other details, just that rough idea? I mean, it sounds far-fetched.
I'm gonna have to say no on that one as well.
Really?
Man. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think.
But then, are we just being cynical?
How would an alien even get a security clearance, man?
Like, well, what I like to think is, well, they just show up at night in his bedroom. I guess I don't know. They could do whatever they want.
That's
right?
True.
Or they use the force, you know, like I don't know, mind control. And the other thing is, what I like to say is like, you know, there's like chimpanzees that we can actually talk to, but we're not like going up teaching them sign language and being like, hey, take me to your leader. You know, like we don't care about their politics or anything. But on the other hand, the U.S. is the superpower that dropped a nuclear bomb. So who knows, you know?
Yeah.
We got the whole wide world in our hands.
We do. Well, at this point.
Well, I mean, like the fate of the, you know,
yeah.
we could make it pretty uninhabitable if we wanted to, probably.
That's right.
I mean, you know, it's a little more complicated than that, but. So then they also hint at the, I guess it's called Die Glock, the Nazi bell or the bell.
Oh, and, like a Glockenspiel?
I think so. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And then, but like I said, I think that's something I'm not really too familiar with, but from what I understand, it's, you know, that's, another conspiracy theory kind of thing that they had that tech that was, you know, unlimited energy or whatever.
Nah.
Fusion kind of or whatever.
Not buying it.
Yeah. And then oh man, I thought I was gonna convince you. And then Stonehenge being a landing pad for flying saucers. Okay. And then
that would no, I'm gonna say no on that one too.
Yeah, see, then it's like we have to believe all of these now because that sounds, you know.
Yeah, wait a minute. So all that, yeah, the Stonehenge thing, this is all in I don't remember the Stonehenge part.
But I believe the hinge is something to do. I kind of read real quick while I was writing this about the bell. And part of, the evidence supporting it was that they found like a kind of a hinge-like structure in a base in Poland or something. So that's probably what it's referring to. But then I also said that it was debunked and it looked like a foundation for a water tower or something like that, you know? So I mean, who knows, you know, I wasn't there, but I know one sounds more likely than the other, the Stonehenge, obviously, but, no.
Yeah. Stonehenge is going to be a no, man.
No, we're not buying that one. So we're 0-2 right now.
Yeah.
Jeez. Sorry, dude. Here.
Sorry.
And then, all right. So then Project Paperclip, really being about alien technology, not about rockets and nukes, or being about all three or whatever. I mean, obviously you got brilliant scientists who you want them, you know. I mean, Albert Einstein was German, right?
Yeah,
we got him before, right?
I think so, he was Austrian.
Okay,
was he? I mean, I don't know, but
or Polish or whatever.
Yeah, well,
but
he
I
fled.
Mean,
he got
they all
out.
Had problems. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. You could be French, you know, and want to get the hell out of there, probably. So, and then, but I mean, this is like actual Nazis and inviting them into the inner workings of the skunk works of the U.S. government, which could have problems, you know?
Yeah, that does not seem plausible either.
Yeah. Well, no, but that, I think that's true though. Project Paperclip, right? But yeah, you mean the alien part of it?
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm not disputing the paperclip part, Paperclip, but the, yeah.
I mean, it seems a lot more likely that they wanted nuclear bombs and all that good stuff.
Right.
And rockets, you know, they want to get to space and get to the moon and all that stuff. So, and then Area 51 housing alien tech, and also along with that, which, well, you know.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna go with a maybe.
Hey.
On this one.
Okay.
Area 51 housing alien tech, because, you know, a little more. You know, I've done my fair share of Tom DeLonge bashing and everything, but I mean, I want to believe, man.
Right.
I think it would be kind of cool.
It'd be interesting,
but I haven't seen the concrete evidence yet, but I think as far as most likely to be true, I would say the Area 51 housing alien stuff is the most likely of the scenarios that we've gone over this far.
Right.
Yeah, thus far.
And that could be anything, right? I mean, they could just have, yeah. I mean, who knows? So, and then what about like a huge secret war and tech race involving, UAPs or UFOs and all that stuff, you know? That's a little more hard to swallow probably, but I don't know. Who knows, you know?
Well, that would be interesting. I mean, if UAPs or UFOs or whatever you want to call them are non-terrestrial in origin, it seems like they would not limit themselves to just one country in the world.
Right.
Right. So, it seems like they would want to explore our entire planet. So if they're,
I guess the Russians having flying saucers and we have invisible flying saucers and there's like this secret like arms race and, you know,
no, I'm going to say no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Obviously that's the answer I was looking for, but, I don't know. I mean, like, you know, I think we established we're both kind of skeptical optimists about it, you know, like we want to believe, but I mean, we're not just going to believe, you know?
Yeah.
You gotta back up extraordinary claims with extraordinary,
evidence.
Yes. And, so they kind of get, I didn't really get into like the technology of the flying saucer, but, you know, they talk about the flying saucers being cloaked and being controlled with your mind kind of, the man-made one, basically they're saying it's like, it can do all the crazy, gravity defying and laws of physics defying moves and speeds and everything. And then there's like the cloak device where no one can see them. But then when he gets into the alien advanced craft, it's basically just like invisible around him. So it's just like, you're just flying around and,
huh.
You know, like, and,
like there was no visible like means of flying the plane or whatever.
Exactly. Okay. Or no, I mean like he got in the ship and then once it started, it just like kind of disappeared instead of like a little porthole or anything. And so you could just see, you know.
Oh.
Yeah. Basically like light bending or whatever.
Okay.
And then kind of similar to what we'll get into, Bob Lazar saying about how there was a porthole and it became clear, you know.
Yeah.
Which is cool to imagine, you know, like flying around in outer space, looking down at the Earth with not seeing your ship around you.
Yeah, that would be kind of, that would be terrifying and exhilarating at the same time.
Yeah, I think, and I don't know, but I'm sure there's been stories like that, like UFO stories like that and stuff. And then being controlled with his mind, when he gets in that one, it's kind of like he bonds with it and it kind of like does what he thinks, you know. Which I've heard about too, which is interesting. They kind of hint at it being kind of like partly alive or something, which I've heard too. But
the craft itself being partly alive.
Yeah, but or kind of having a will of its own or something, you know,
like Flight of the Navigator. Isn't that what happened in Flight of the Navigator?
Yeah, a little bit, I guess. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, we're trying to make. I mean, I was just reading about or kind of studying artificial intelligence and stuff. I mean, that's the goal, is to have things be able to make. You know, do it naturally, but you're in control or whatever. So, I mean, yeah, advanced technology, that's kind of, maybe you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between life and not life, you know. And then government agencies faking alien abductions. That's like, have you heard on the Betty and Barney Hill incident? Like there was a guy there, like, you know, or there's always like guys. I guess that was like a common thing where there'd be like one human sitting there watching everything go down or whatever.
I don't remember that part of the Betty and Barney Hill story.
Yeah, I think there was a man that was like looking at him out the window or something.
In the craft?
Yeah, yeah. The version that I heard anyway, but again, I haven't looked too closely at it or anything. Which is interesting, you know, and creepy. Like, can you imagine like some... I read something somewhere, you know, that like... that was part of the contract, is they were allowed to kidnap people, U.S. citizens, but then there was like a government guy on board to make sure that they didn't break any rules or something. I mean, yeah, it's crazy.
Wait, and part of a contract?
I mean, I don't remember who wrote it and like what their credentials were or anything.
Wow.
But yeah, that was kind of the thing. And then, but then there's also
sign on the dotted line.
But I think there's a lot of things where it's like, you know, some of the, at least, one race that's visiting us looks like humans anyway, or whatever. I forget what they're called. The Pleiadians, I believe.
Okay.
I don't know if the mic just picked up my stomach there. And then government agencies faking alien abductions. And then Men in Black. It seems like in the book, I couldn't even, like I said, everything's just kind of vaguely hinted at. You just like, here you go. And I don't know. But it seems obvious that it was, I'm not sure if I mentioned it, but I think it's kind of a guidebook for, you ask what the target audience, it would be someone that's not aware of any of this stuff. Right. And then
you're
leaving a breadcrumb trail.
I think it's a cop out. I think it's a cop. I think it's a gigantic cop out is what it is. Yeah. I'm just going to come out and say it, man. I think it's a cop out.
I think,
you know, you need to, if you got something to say, you got to say it.
Yeah.
Point blank.
Just saying, well, it could be this. You know. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
What if I were to tell you that this happened? Okay. Right. Well, then you're telling me that it happened. Where's the evidence that it happened?
Again, getting back to Lost, where you're wondering what this whole mystery is about. It's like, oh, it's just the actor read the line in a mysterious way. So we kind of kept building it up because everyone wondered about it or something. You know what I mean? Because the actors didn't know what was going on, what they were talking about.
Let me ask you this. What would you think if it were titled Secret Machines Chasing Shadows, a novel? Did you enjoy reading it at all? Or it sounds like it was drudgery, man.
Well, yeah, but again, I don't think I'm the target audience for this, you know? And I felt like I was juggling a lot at the time. I had a lot of different pressures I was putting on myself, and I was trying to kind of escape by reading this, but I mean, it was mind-numbingly boring, honestly. Like after a while, like, none of the characters are really that interesting, you know, and everyone's kind of had the same personality. They're smart, sassy, and yeah, I don't know. I just,
well, I wonder why it's a different co-author with the second book.
Well, I believe, AJ Hartley, I mean, these are two different series here too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. See, this is volume one of Gods, Man, and War. gods. See, that's what I was confused about. Secret machines, gods. So yeah, that's exactly. They're both secret machines. That one's a novel. This one is supposed to be nonfiction. It's just analyzing like how all these, from what I believe, that gods are basically aliens, you know? So yeah, I started with this one because I was hoping it would be entertaining, but now after reading this, I don't really want to go through this.
Well,
one, but
I maybe, you know what, man, if you want, I'll,
hey, that could be awesome.
You know
yeah.
what? You want me to go ahead and try and fire this baby up and
that
see what
good,
I
yeah.
see what my take is on it?
Yeah, that would be interesting. Cool. I probably should have just read that one first, you know, because I'm totally into the ancient alien stuff, but I'm tired of, you know, I hate being misled too.
Yeah, just even like the back right here.
I know. I mean, look at the title, Secret Machines, Book 1, Chasing... well, that's not
it's,
too bad,
but
the Godman's in War 1 drives me crazy. And I think A.J. Hartley, he's like a thriller writer, you know, so he does do those types of books I'm talking about. That's why. And then this guy would be more of like a, I don't know who he is, but like a scholarly writer or something.
Yeah, seems a bit too cute, man.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, you know. Okay. And then they mention a lot of UFO, historic UFO sightings through the interstitial chapters, like the Belgian Lights, Betty and Barney Hill, a U.S. nuclear base being visited. And in the story, it mentions things like Wernher von Braun and the Foo Fighters, not the band, but the, you know, what they saw in World War II, apparently.
Right,
a lot of
World
Foo
War
Fighters.
II fighter pilots kept seeing things.
So yeah, like, that's so enticing to me if yeah, that's true, really... but then that sounds like the kind of thing that you tell, like, new pilots or something, you know. Or
ooh, I hadn't thought about that. Just I mean, like to haze rooks or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, think about military people. That
better watch out for those Foo Fighters up there, kid.
It's like... Yeah, anyway. And then, but I had heard that, well, anyway, whatever, they're all rumors, you know. And then Stonehenge being a landing pad for flying saucers is the last thing, which I already kind of went over. But that's all I really remember. That was my takeaway, and it was all stuff I kind of heard before, you know, and they're all just kind of, I mean, they didn't explain it, you know. I don't know. Yeah, I felt like it was kind of a waste of time. I mean, you read the end of it, and that's how it ends, you know. It's like, oh, I mean, what...
Maybe we could convince one of our non-UFO friends to read it and get their take on it.
Yeah.
That might be interesting.
But then they're just, I mean, there's no reason to believe anything. Why do I have any reason to care what's in that story? I guess that's my main takeaway from it. It's like, okay, so Tom DeLonge thinks all this stuff might be real, I guess. And cool. He did. I think he said that like he had government people on him and like kind of making sure what he said in the book and everything. But I don't know. Tough. It's a tough pill to swallow. So that's my take on it. That's my book report.
Okay.
Any last thoughts
well,
on
thank
there
you.
Anything? You had mentioned
I'm glad you had
it
to
sounds kind of culty.
Well, the whole
because I was saying I don't know if I really answered, but I think it's marketed towards younger people and people that aren't aware but might be willing to believe it. Kind of like I don't know, maybe like ancient aliens, you know, just throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and blow people's minds, you know.
Well, the
and it says based on a true story on the cover, so you got to take it seriously. But
yeah, well, the whole to the stars thing just seems a bit cultish, like the way he was trying to get funding for it and everything like that.
Right.
His to the stars company. Do we know how that's doing, by the way? Is it still around?
It's still around.
Are they still putting out stuff and they're still.
Yeah. Yeah. Know? I've got the link on here. Yeah, they just put out a show on the History Channel, actually, which I really want to see. It's supposed to be pretty good. It's got all the advisors and stuff in there, and they break down. I don't know. It sounds cool, like just like a cool show about UFOs, if nothing else.
Well, yeah.
And I want to get into the video. They have released some of those cool videos, like the Tic Tac video. You know, they have the pilot involved in it and everything. And then the what was the other one? The I don't know, a couple of them though.
Okay. And
I can't remember what the gimbal video. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
Hmm.
But basically just weird advanced craft that they can't even comprehend how it works and stuff, you know, borderline magic stuff. So it's cool. It's enticing. But yeah, this book,
not so much.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I was trying to rush through it too, but it became a drudge for sure.
Okay. Well, I'll be happy to take the laboring oar, as they say, and read Gods. Right. About Gods.
Secret Machines, Gods, book one.
Yeah.
Gods. Yeah, I don't even understand it. Anyway, all right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you, everyone. And we'll be back at you with some more fun stuff.
Ciao.